eat it. Get yourself an egg and beat it. Have some more chicken, have some more pie. It doesn't matter if boiled or fried, just eat it.
Well, Weird Al Yankovic makes the perfect introduction to my next guest. His name is Larry Olmsted. He writes the Great American Bites column for USA Today and is the travel and food columnist at Forbes.com. But the reason I have him on here today is because of his book, which is now out in paperback, called Real Food, Fake Food, Why You Don't Know What You're Eating and What You Can Do About It. Hi, Larry. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on here is because a couple of years ago, my wife and I stopped buying Parmesan cheese in cardboard canisters made by major manufacturers once I found out that they had in them wood pulp. It doesn't say that on the label. It says cellulose, and they tell you that they put it in there so that the cheese doesn't cake inside there. But I didn't know that when I thought I was just eating 100% cheese, I was actually eating wood pulp along with it. And I decided I didn't want to do that. And so now we buy our own little triangles of Parmesan cheese at the same supermarkets and grate them at home. And I feel much better about myself. Am I alone in this?
You are not alone. It's certainly a growing thing, and that's one of the specific things I always tell people when I talk about the cheese topic is, you know, you don't use you only use grated Parmigiano Reggiano cheese in small quantities, usually on your pasta or on your pizza or to add a little to a recipe. So it's so easy, as you've learned, to just take a piece of actual cheese and grate it. You know, it takes a couple of seconds versus that stuff in the canister, which, you know, not only has a lot of added cellulose, way more usually than they need to keep it from clumping, but it's just crappy cheese to begin with and is not, in fact, Parmesan cheese most of the time.
Yeah, you're right that the cheese is not that good, but what do you mean it's not real Parmesan cheese?
Well, Parmesan cheese is like champagne. It's a geographically designated type of cheese made in Parma, Italy.
Of course.
But like champagne, it's not protected under U.S. copyright laws, so they can make anything in this country and label it Parmesan cheese or Kobe beef or champagne or Chianti or Burgundy or many other things like this, and they do. I've never seen actual Italian Parmesan cheese pre-grated in one of those canisters.
But you can buy it in the cheese section of the supermarket. You just got to pay more.
Actually, in most of the topics in my book, the good foods or the real foods do tend to be more expensive. This is one where that's not the case.
Oh.
Real Italian Parmesan cheese, which is much better than any domestic imitation I've seen, is often cheaper than the domestic versions.
When we were, my wife and I went to Italy for our first trip there about 4 years ago, and we went on a food tour in Rome, and as the woman was taking us from one place to another, she took us to this place that is just a cheese shop. I'd never seen a place that was just cheese. It wasn't cheese and wine. It wasn't cheese and bread. It was just a cheese shop. And they had these gigantic wheels of Parmesan Reggiano, or is there a Roman version of that? Romano, I guess. And of course, we got free samples while we were in there. I realized then I've never tasted real Parmesan cheese because I was getting that cardboard stuff.
Yeah, and because it only comes in the one size wheel, and that wheel weighs 86 pounds, you have to buy your cheese at a place, you know, ideally that goes through a high volume of it so it doesn't get dried out.
Right.
But most U.S. supermarkets do a high volume of it, and you know, I did a book signing in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where there's a famous gourmet store there called Zingerman's, and they did an olive oil tasting to accompany my book signing. Olive oil is another product I talk about at length in the book, and everybody said what you just said. They're like, I never tasted olive oil before.
Yeah.
So many of the foods in my book, they get away with making poor substitutes because people don't know how they're supposed to taste.
Yeah, that's another thing I did while we were there. We were in the Tuscany region, and we went to a place where there are actual olive trees, and so it's really fresh olive oil, and I did a tasting comparing three different kinds of olive oil. And you're right, it's a completely different taste than we're used to.
I mean, the Greeks who consume the most olive oil in the world actually will drink it, like from a shot glass, sip it. And I tell people that, and they're like, oh, that sounds gross. But if you tried good olive oil, you could totally understand why you would do that.
Yeah. Now, what is extra virgin olive oil? Why can't I just buy olive oil and be happy with that?
I compare it to gasoline. You know, when you go to fill your car, there's like regular, premium, and super premium.
Yeah.
So when they make olive oil, it's graded, and it's graded on two things. One is the actual chemical composition, the free fatty acids and things that they have standards for. And the second is taste. It's one of the few products in the world that's actually required to be tasted and graded to be labeled. And if it passes both of those tests at the highest level, you know, it's an A student, it becomes extra virgin. Virgin is a level down from that, and there's a level down from that as well that you don't want to be buying. But in this country, it's hard to find anything that's not labeled extra virgin because a lot of olive oil is incorrectly labeled extra virgin.
Yeah, in fact, I go to restaurants sometimes, Italian restaurants, and on the menu, when they tell you about each item, they tell you about the ingredients, and they have EVOO on there, which is extra virgin olive oil. What are the chances that's actually what it is?
I think if you're at a better Italian restaurant, you know, more of a fine dining type place, they do tend to use good quality olive oil because the chefs and the cooks know it and it affects the taste. But at like a fast casual type place where they give you a bowl of oil colored liquid and some rolls to dip in, and I would never touch that stuff.
Oil-colored liquid. Oh, that's my favorite phrase of the day so far, Larry. You mentioned Kobe beef. I don't eat red meat, so I wouldn't have any idea what this is. But I know that it's one of those things that people go, ooh, Kobe beef. Are they really getting something special?
If you actually got Kobe beef, you'd be getting something very special. I mean, it's generally regarded as sort of the Rolls Royce of red meat, or it's the most famous prize steak in the world. But it's made in minuscule quantities. Very little of it leaves Japan. There's about a dozen restaurants in the United States that actually sell Kobe beef, but hundreds that have it on the menu.
Okay, so they're lying.
Yes.
There's a lot of lying in this food industry, I learned as I was reading through your book, particularly in the world of seafood.
Seafood is probably the single worst category. As I like to say, it's not because the people in the seafood business are immoral and the people in the pork or cheese business are saints. It's because there's so many different kinds of seafood. If you go to a bar and order chicken wings and they give you lamb chops, you're going to be like, hey, these aren't chicken wings.
Yeah.
But what most people don't know what most fish look like. So when you order red snapper and they give you tilapia and it's breaded and fried or under a mound of sauce or in a soup, you have no idea.
Even if they brought the whole fish out, most people couldn't look at it and go, oh, that's tilapia. I want a snapper.
Exactly. And you know, I do encourage people to order and buy more whole fish once they know what it looks like. I mean, red snapper is the most substituted fish in the United States. It's an expensive, high-quality fish. And if you could take the time to just learn what a red snapper looked like, you would never get fooled if you ordered one whole. And more supermarkets and quality fish markets are selling whole fish but doing the work for you. So you pick your red snapper and you say, hey, I want that cut into steaks or fillets, and they cut it, but you've seen it, so it's kind of a win-win. You don't have to know how to prep a fish, and you still get real fish.
So seafood, the most frequently faked division of food we're talking about?
Well, across the board, it's just that there's so many seafood products that you don't get. I mean, Inside Edition did a thing on lobster. And I say, like, a Maine lobster is sort of the ultimate real food. It only comes out of the ocean. They don't have farms. You know what it looks like. It doesn't even look like other lobsters. When you see that whole lobster, you can't be fooled. But once you put it in something, you can. And when they did this study of restaurants across the country, about a third of the time they were selling something like a lobster bisque or lobster-filled ravioli, it didn't have any lobster in it.
What was it?
Usually it's just a chopped up mix of other fish, sometimes shellfish and whitefish, but my favorite was that they bought lobster ravioli from an Italian restaurant in Little Italy in New York, and it didn't even have any seafood in it.
See, now, I can understand here in the Midwest, where our major water source is the Mississippi and the Missouri rivers, we're not getting lobster that we expect to be fresh. If you go to New England, especially up towards Maine, okay there. But isn't it flown in fresh to other places around the country, or maybe not fresh, but on ice? Why isn't there lobster going everywhere?
Well, there is. And again, you know, you can buy typically a whole Maine lobster in like a nicer steakhouse or a seafood restaurant pretty much anywhere in the world. And you see that lobster, it's real. But once it's processed, and this is the case with most foods. I mean, if you remember a couple of years ago, there was a big horse meat scandal in Europe. And it wasn't that people were, you know, ordering a steak and getting a horse steak. It was in things like frozen lasagna TV dinners. So anytime the food is sort of chopped up and processed and you can no longer recognize it in its native form, it lends itself to adulteration.
Don't we have something called the Food and Drug Administration, whose job it is to regulate this sort of stuff?
Yes, we do. And they do a really poor job on the food front. They do a much better job on the drug front. Historically, they seem to have convinced themselves that that's the business that they're in. I find a lot of fault in my book with the FDA. They don't do the inspections that they're required by law to do. They fall asleep at the switch on a lot of things. And you know, nowadays, the government just shuts down.
Oh, is that right? But is that a funding deficit or is this complicity on a part of the federal government with the food industry?
It's definitely more funding, but it has to do with their priorities. So they always say, you know, that drugs and bigger public safety issues are more important, and they have a limited budget. And, you know, it seems like no matter how much money you give them, they never get around to the food.
Yeah, but only a fraction of Americans are using drugs, while 100% of us are using food.
That's absolutely true, you know, and most of us three times a day or so. And there's a lot of health-related issues with food. So I look at food as a drug that everyone is taking. And there's a lot of evidence that, you know, some of these substitutes are, at the best, not as good for you, and at the worst, dangerous. And that's certainly the case we've seen with seafood, where some of the fish that gets substituted for expensive fish isn't just something that tastes bad, it's something that's potentially harmful.
What about some of these phrases that we've seen? I like to think of them as pure marketing on some food items, like free range or organic or all natural, etc. Are there real definitions for these things, or are we just kind of throwing them on there because they don't mean anything?
Not for most of them. The one that you mentioned that is valuable is organic. Organic is pretty strictly defined for most food categories. So if you want, for example, your chicken or pork or beef to be free of hormones and steroids and antibiotics, which I consider a very high profile issue in this country, organic is a good way to, without a lot of education, the consumer know that they're getting around those drugs. However, there's no organic standard for seafood. So when you see seafood labeled organic, it's meaningless. But the other terms you mentioned, I think natural or all natural or pure, those are the worst because they're on everything. They have absolutely no meaning. Again, the FDA has chosen, it's not an oversight, they've willfully chosen not to define natural so that manufacturers can use it any way they want, and it fools a lot of people.
Yeah, that word pure, I learned about that lie when I was 18 years old and I worked at McDonald's, and the manager said, go to the freezer and bring a box of hamburger patties up here, which we had to do every day. And so I bring it up, and I, for the first time, noticed that on the box it said 100% beef. And so I said to the manager, are these really 100% beef? He said, yes, the meat in there is 100% beef.
That's very much true. I tell the same story in the book using a lawsuit against a hot dog manufacturer saying we never meant to say the hot dogs were made of 100% beef. It's just that the beef in it is 100% beef.
Yeah, you're saying everything you need to by not saying everything you need to. That tells me enough. So is there such a thing, Larry, as food knockoffs, food that we get right here in America, but instead, because it's cheaper, we're getting it from China or somewhere like that?
Yeah, I actually sometimes I'm a guest on the Dr. Oz show, and we just talked about this in the last one I did about honey. There's been a lot of problems with honey coming out of China, so the FDA bans the import of Chinese honey, and the Chinese manufacturers ship it to other countries. It's done with seafood a lot, too. It's called transshipment, so they'll send it to Malaysia or Singapore or someplace and then relabel the boxes, so it comes apparently from a country where it's not banned, but it's not their product. And then in the case of seafood also, you get it just being completely relabeled where it says it's one kind of fish and it's not.
So would it help to buy American? And by the way, how would I know if my food was American?
Yeah, that's a big problem because especially anything processed, anything that's not what they call a single ingredient product like milk, anything that's processed or made, the country of origin on it is just the country where it was made. So you could make a TV dinner or a frozen pizza and it says product of the U.S., but none of the ingredients in it have to come from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the more processed it is, it's harder to tell. There are some things that definitely are better if they originate in the U.S. Farmed seafood, we have the best standards for aquaculture in the world, so I'll only buy farmed seafood if it comes from the United States. Other things that are not farmed in seafood, like Alaska, has the best salmon, right? Wild-caught Alaskan salmon. The only problem is sometimes it says wild-caught Alaskan salmon, and it's neither Alaskan nor wild-caught.
Mm. And what about produce? I know when I go to the produce section of my supermarket and I'm buying bananas or apples or oranges or anything like that, we can't possibly be growing that stuff in the United States 12 months of the year, so a lot of it has to be imported. Are we getting good deals out of that, or are we paying enough to also cover air shipments?
Well, most of it comes by boat, not by air, so it's relatively cheap to ship. And in fact, there's an argument to be made that, you know, bringing apples from Chile by boat is cheaper than the farmer's market guy putting them in the back of his pickup
really?
And driving them to the farmer's market per unit.
Wow.
But the thing is, what people have to really think about is seasonality, right? Anywhere in the United States, like apples are a great example. Apples don't really grow in warm weather places like Florida. They grow in Vermont and Michigan and Washington and Oregon, the northern half of the country. And they're harvested everywhere in this country in the fall. So if it's June and you're buying apples from the U.S., they have to be almost a year old. There's no apples being picked in May or April or the spring.
Couldn't they be
and
from
it
Chile?
It is common. They call it an industry century apple. I mean, anniversary apples or birthday apples, which are apples that have been on the shelves for over a year.
Wow. But couldn't that have been imported fruit, Larry?
And usually it will say. So if the apple says, hey, product of Chile, and their seasons are reversed, now it makes sense. In the summer, I'd rather buy an apple from Chile than from the U.S. because their fall is our spring.
Right.
So it gets a little complicated, but, you know, it's not there's a lot of things to make fun of and a lot of concerns, but I do want to emphasize, you know, that the reason I call the book Real Food, Fake Food is because I put the real food first. And I look at it as like the glass half to empty. I want to tell you how to eat well, not to be terrified.
There's some great tips in here. Real Food, Fake Food, Why You Don't Know What You're Eating and What You Can Do About It. He also has the website, realfoodfakefood.com. Nice grab of that URL. Larry Olmsted writes about food for USA Today and Forbes as well. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTR. RS.